Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Gentle Parents Unite podcast with Sujai Johnston and Vivek Patel. I'm Sujai, and I'm here today with my friend and colleague, Vivek. How are you doing today, Vivek? It's so great to be here with you.
Thank you, Sujai. Me too. It feels like a while since we got together and talked.
I think it has been. We may have missed a week or two in there, eh?
Yeah, things have been busy lately. And fortunately busy with supporting parents and doing that kind of stuff. So we've been busy with good stuff. Today we're going to be talking about something interesting, and it's something that I consider, you know, something really important because it's on parents' minds a lot, and that's manners. How do we help kids learn manners?
Mm-hmm. And
I think it's something that comes up in posts all the time, especially when you and I write posts about don't punish your kids, don't give them consequences, don't tell them they're wrong. All that kind of stuff. Don't insist on how they talk to you. Don't tell them, you know, if you do that again, you're going to be in trouble. All that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So often the response that we get to that is, if you don't tell them what to do, if you don't give them consequences, they're going to grow up rude and entitled and disrespectful. And I certainly heard that when my kid who's 24 now, when had never been punished and never been, you know, pretty much, I say pretty much because of course we always make mistakes, but our intention consistently has been pretty much never to, she's never been in trouble, never had a consequence, never even told she was wrong for any decision she made. And we got told all the time how rude she was going to be and how disrespectful she was going to be. And of course, you know, the opposite, of course, came true from that because it's always been an interesting thing to me how people associate treating kids disrespectfully is somehow going to make them learn respect. And it's not really a mystery because that's the mindset that's been passed down from generation to generation. But it really isn't what respect is about. One of my sayings about respect is respect comes from caring about other people, not from being afraid of what will happen if you don't.
Mm-hmm. And the dictionary definition of respect is deep admiration. And, you know, deep admiration isn't built through fear. It's built through the connection and the relationship and the love that we share with somebody. And so when we look at the definition of respect, and it's interesting because the definition of respect is a deep admiration. And yet the definition of disrespect is all of these things that we associate with being, you know, disrespectful. So the words actually don't have the exact same meaning in the dictionary, but respect is truly built through the connection and the relationship. And when somebody is acting disrespectful, when they're, you know, disregarding what you said or belittling or putting down or any of those things, that is built through the exact opposite, the fear and the control and, you know, the feeling that children really get of oppression, and they're pushing back against that. And that's the thing that we're labeling as disrespect, is the child pushing for their autonomy and their freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know, when kids are acting out in ways that we see as disrespectful, like you said, they're communicating something to us that they need our guidance with. They don't need to be punished, and they don't need to be told they're wrong. They're already struggling, and then we add to their struggle with that stuff, right? And if we really want them to consider their actions, to consider the impact of their actions on other people, we need to be considering the impact of our interactions on them. So often what happens is kids develop a negative association with our guidance. They develop a negative association with us telling them things because it hurts when we tell them things. And if we want to be their guides, you know, I mean, I think it's reasonable for parents, not only reasonable, I think it's important for parents to want to be guiding their children. I think that's one of the main roles that we have in their lives, thank goodness. You know, like I often say, when my kid was born, I was 28. And so I had 28, I mean, 28 is still pretty young, but I had 28 years of mistakes in my life that I had reflected on. And I wanted to share that wisdom with her. I wanted to share my experience with her. I wanted her to learn what I knew about life. But, you know, the way parents often respond to their or relate to their kids around guiding them, it actually makes guidance a drag for them. They don't want to hear it. And so then they pull away. And then when we try and tell them about respect, they want to do the opposite. You know, they automatically want to do the opposite. And we can see that so many parents say, why does my kid automatically want to do the opposite of what I want when I say something? And I think this is something like, if we want to teach them respect, which I think is not unreasonable, especially if we think about respect as being caring about our impact of our actions on other people, which I think is a good way of thinking about it, caring about our impact, the impact of our actions and our choices on other people. And if we want to care about that impact, we want to teach them that, that's a feeling, that's a caring. You know, you can't impose someone to care. You can impose an external action for a short period of time with force, but you can't impose on someone that they care. You can't insist on someone that they care. You can't force someone to care. Caring is something that can be inspired through relationship, that can be inspired through self-reflection, through self-knowledge, and through empathy, you know, having an empathetic relationship with somebody, an empathic relationship with somebody. And then what that means is then you feel the other person's feeling when you're doing something. You know, when I'm talking to a friend and I say something that maybe rubs them the wrong way, I feel it right away. You know, usually if I'm paying attention to them, maybe their silence is a little long. Maybe the silence is a little heavy. If I'm in person with them, maybe their body gets tense. Their breathing changes, something. And then because I care about them, I'll stop and I'll say, oh, did I say something that upset you just now? And that's respect, right? Respect is really paying attention to the other person and caring about them, not respecting someone just because they're your parent or just because they're an adult or just because they're a teacher or just because they're your boss. But caring about people because you care about people. And I think that's something that we really need to focus on in our interactions with our kids. How are we in this moment? How are we in this moment inspiring that feeling of wanting to care for other people, wanting to care for our impact on other people? And I think that is requires a whole different way of looking at teaching manners than we normally do.
Yes, I very much agree with that statement. And I find that, you know, a lot of the ways that we go about teaching manners are counterproductive to having that deep, sincere sense of feeling and being thankful, or, the desire to say please and all of these things, they really come from that deep sense of connection, as well as, you know, part of it, for me, I feel that the biggest piece to teaching manners is the modeling. You know, our children are constantly watching how we're interacting. Do we say please and thank you? Are we polite? You know, do we have these manners that we're putting forward in the way that we would hope that our children would take them on? And, you know, my children have had other people say to them, oh, what do you say? You know, and they kind of just look at them like, huh?
What is that? What does that mean?
Right. Yeah. Because they've never been prompted, you know, what do you say? And yet I'm a very pleased and thank you person. I always have been. It may be partly due to socialization, but I care about my impact. And I've always thought that being polite and using good manners and saying please and thank you was, you know, a reasonable social engagement, social contract, expectation. And so I've always been a very, you know, polite person who cared about the impact that I have on other people. And so I say please and thank you. And I find that my children just naturally, most of the time, say please and thank you when engaging. And sometimes when my children are like struggling, you know, I might get a lot of demands and no pleases or thank yous.
Right.
But once they've gotten through whatever the struggle was with, you know, I definitely, you know, in those moments that those happen, once they get through what the struggle's with, you know, I get a lot of thank yous and appreciation and love, and I can feel the gratitude as opposed to, you know, the forced gratitude in the moment where, you know, I can't help you now until you say these words, and which breeds the exact opposite of what you're looking for, because, you know, it breeds resentment. And, you know, like you were saying, when the child perceives, well, you say, not in this podcast, but you were saying in another podcast.
Yeah.
When the child perceives us as a block to meeting their needs, then it creates that contention in the relationship, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Because, you know, kids are, well, not only kids, but all of us in a way, we're always looking at how can we get our needs met, relational needs, emotional needs, material needs too, physical needs. And so if we're around somebody who is consistently making us feel like that's not safe to do around them, and they're not going to help us, and they're actually blocking us from getting those important needs met, then we're going to put up barriers around them. We're going to put up walls around them. And when our kids start putting up walls around us, we're certainly not teaching them respect at that point. We're teaching them to be wary. We're teaching them to be afraid. We're teaching them to walk around us with one eye open. And it doesn't teach the skill in a long lasting way. You know, like we often want to stop kids from their behavior when the behavior seems disrespectful or wrong, because we feel if we don't get a handle on it right away, they're just going to run off and it's going to be how they are. They're going to be, and then you always hear people saying, oh, it's the lack of punishment and consequences and lack of taking control of your kids. That's why kids are so disrespectful these days. Now, first of all, I just like to say there's no such thing as kids being disrespectful these days. Kids have always been disrespectful according to adults. And there's people quoting that from like 2000 years ago or something like that, right?
Yes, indeed.
So it's always been every generation. If you're the person who's saying that, please take a moment and take a deep breath, take a pickle out of your butt, and just take that moment to recognize that you're being kind of uptight about this. Take a moment to recognize you're being kind of uptight about this kind of thing. I remember when my kid, who, like I said before, is now 24, when she was in grade one, I was in all the way through elementary school, I was in the chair of the school council, and I would go to all the school council meetings and everything. And at one point, I remember I was in this one school council meeting, and this one guy was going on, father was going on and on and on about the kids, disrespectful this and that, and they're wearing their pants down around their bum. You can see their underwear. I just couldn't take it anymore. I was like, excuse me, grandpa, but have you completely forgotten what it's like to be a young person? It sounds like you've completely forgotten what it's like to be a young person. I said, you have no idea what you're talking about. And I just couldn't take it. And I mean, it was very shortly after that they all voted me in to be chair. So I think a lot of people agreed with me at the time. but you know, people have this way of thinking. And when we get trapped into doing that, what we're doing is we're placing young people as like in a separate category. We other them, you know, we make them other, and then they feel that from us too. And that's why kids talk about adults like we're another species, really, you know? And I remember that. I remember when I was a kid thinking that adults for the most part were like another species, and it doesn't have to be that way. You know, it doesn't have to be that way. We can form deeply connected, respectful relationships with kids, and we can do it by, like you said, by modeling. And there's different areas of model, right? So there's the most obvious model is how we treat our kids. So if we are demanding things of them, if we are giving them consequences, which means, you know, the point of a consequence is to hurt someone. Let's just be really blunt about it. The point of a consequence is to hurt. If the consequence makes them feel good, it's not really consequences in the way that we're talking about, you know? Like if every time your kid does something wrong, you offer them ice cream and to take them to a movie, that's fine. I can get behind that kind of consequence. But that's not what we mean when we say consequences. We mean imposed consequences that are designed to hurt the child in some way so that they'll reconsider doing the same thing the next time. They don't want to experience that pain again. And so because they don't want to experience that pain, they're going to alter their behavior. This is the thinking behind consequences. And I think it's really important to understand that, because if that's the model that we're setting, that you cause someone else pain in order to alter their behavior. I mean, that's nobody would define that as respect. And so then that's the model that we're teaching them. That's what they're going to end up taking on as how human relationships work. They're not taking on human relationships. They're not taking on an idea of human relationships where they want to care about their impact. In fact, they recognize from our model that we want to cause other people pain and discomfort in order to get our way. And this is not teaching respect. There's no way.
That's a very important point that you make. It's really near and dear to my heart, because I feel like, you know, and when you're so blunt about like the underlying that when we use manipulation to gain compliance from our children, we're teaching our children to use manipulation to gain compliance from others. And when you really look down at the core root of that thing and all of the things that stem out of this kind of a power structure, it's abuse conditioning. And it's one of the things that really continues to carry on the cycle of abuse. And when we can get down to the roots of that, we can really make a lot of change in the world, because it's a missed opportunity to really help somebody gain a social skill, to help somebody learn how to navigate, problem solve. You know, anytime, you know, in life, there's consequences for our behavior. For every action, there is a reaction, and there's chain reactions. And sometimes those chain reactions go way down the line and they affect a lot of people and a lot of different things and a lot of different ways, right? And in life, you know, we make choices based on lots of different things. Hopefully we're able to make choices based on, you know, like really thought out thought processes and make the best choices and take low risks and all of that stuff. But that's not how life really works. And sometimes we miscalculate. Sometimes accidents happen. Sometimes we do things thinking more of ourselves than others. You know, there's a lot of different scenarios out there. And when something goes wrong, or we've done something out of alignment with ourselves, or we've done, you know, had an accident or done something that's considered bad, there's a lot of consequences for that in life. You know, for example, let's just say, you know, I go out and I have an accident in my car. There's a lot of different consequences that could be associated with that. You know, hopefully, you know, I myself, I'm a 45-year-old and employed person. And so I have insurance, and like, so the consequences for that would be lower than, you know, somebody who might not have full coverage insurance and might not be able to cover everything that happened in the accident. And yet there could still be other chains of, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's associated with that. And so when things go wrong in life and we have a problem, we can look at that thing like it's this problem and it's just overwhelming us and we don't know what to do. And we could even add more consequences on top of it so that the lesson gets learned, right? Or we can just work on solving that problem, because it's a situation we have to navigate. And when we approach our children's behavior with that curiosity and with that problem-solving mindset, where, you know, we're not adding another further consequence. Life is full of consequences. We're helping the child to navigate the consequences, to understand the consequences of their actions, and to learn tools to do things differently, as well as to learn the tools to heal or to make things right or to get through a situation. You know, there's so many underlying things that happen when life isn't all sunshine and rainbows, and life isn't always all sunshine and rainbows. And how do we get through life when life isn't all sunshine and rainbows, right?
I agree with you about the sunshine and rainbows. And that's another area that people use to justify coercion or treating our kids harshly, is they say the world is going to be harsh. We have to prepare them. But then again, I want to say that I agree with that. I agree the world is harsh, just like you said. And I agree that things are going to be challenging and not everyone's going to be nice to them, and that we want to prepare them for that. I 100% agree with that. That's always been one of my main intentions with my kid, is to prepare her to face a harsh world. The thing is, the way to do that isn't to make our homes a replica of the harsh world. That's not actually going to do it. That doesn't actually going to prepare them. All that does is it makes them have to close off, and they never get to learn how to manage it. People say that, but they don't actually think, well, how do I manage it? I mean, how do I even manage it? Most people just imagine by repressing all their feelings and being shut off from their emotions and, you know, and having toxic relationships. And then, and like you said, with the abuse conditioning, then we take abusive behavior from people until we don't, and then we cut them out of our lives and or whatever, you know, like that's in order for us to actually deal with the difficult things in life and the difficult people in life effectively. It requires us knowing ourselves very well. It requires us having a strong inner relationship with ourselves. It requires us knowing that we don't need the validation of other people. And at the same time, like I said before, caring about our impact on other people. We want to be able to set clear boundaries and know that our boundaries are valid. We want to know that we deserve to be treated well. And also we want to know how to respond when someone else isn't treating us well. Like these are all really important and deep things that we need to teach our kids. Or I won't say need to, but it's very helpful for us if we and for them if we do teach those things to our kids. And the punishment mindset just doesn't do that. The only thing the punishment mindset does is it teaches kids to try and not get punished. And that's not really, it doesn't teach any of those deep and effective things that we want to help kids.
You know, another thing that it teaches actually, Vivek, yeah, is to add layers of pain to layers of pain. And layers of pain don't have a lot of, you know, when we're locked into those adding layers of pain to layers of pain and, you know, stuck in these cycles, you know, the abused become the abusers and, you know, or the abusees. And, you know, it's all layers of pain. And what we ultimately want to be teaching are these great life skills for working through situations, emotional awareness and knowledge, understanding our environment and our impacts, and deep understanding of self. Yeah. And we can bring about so much change in this world. You know, I get really passionate about this stuff because I feel like the entire world is, or not the entire world, but a great portion of the world, you know, it's been built on a control mindset. It's been built on a, you know, a heavy military mindset and, you know, wars and control and oppression and all of these things that years and generations and most people have these places where, you know, their mind just like it goes back to, well, what else can you do except for control? And, you know, even for me, over years and years of hard work, there's moments where you're like, yeah, what else can you do but control something or, you know. But the true healing and understanding really comes out of having good life skills and knowing how to navigate life in positive ways that are impactful to, you know, the universe on a whole and the way that we carry ourselves in that universe. And
yeah, exactly. And we can teach those things to our kids. This brings me to what you're saying, brings me to our second, the second area of modeling that I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. The first was modeling how we interact with our kids, right? That's a huge model. The second one is how we treat ourselves. That's a second model because our kids are watching how we treat ourselves. The kids are watching what is our self-talk? How do we respond to ourselves when we make mistakes? How are we kind to ourselves? How are we nurturing to ourselves? How are we compassionate to ourselves? Are we really harsh with ourselves? But not only that, how are we with our self-evaluation? You know, when we look at ourselves are we honest with ourselves about our mistakes? Are we willing to look at ourselves and apologize? You know, apologizing to our kids is one of the greatest things we can do as far as modeling respect because, wow, boy, are we ever respecting them. But in order to get to the point of apologizing, we have to be able to look at ourselves honestly, right? That's what's behind an apology, especially a good apology. I have something called apology butt. which of course goes with empathy butt and autonomy butt. Those are my butts. I love the butts. And apology butt is when you're apologizing, but it's not really an apology. You know, you're saying, well, I'm sorry I yelled at you, but you shouldn't have been doing that other thing. You know, you shouldn't have been throwing things. You shouldn't have been teasing your sibling. And so the apology is not really an apology. You're not really taking responsibility for the impact that you had, right? So we want to apologize to our kids. And in order to do that, we have to be able to be really honest with ourselves. Are we operating from our principles, from our values? Do we even know what our values are? This is something that you teach a lot and guide people through a lot, is being able to, you know, really evaluate and know your own values. Because if we don't know our values, and a lot of people will talk about values without actually having sat down and thought about, what are my values? And so when we model how our self-knowledge is so important, and our own skills in navigating the world, and having it really like a strong sense of emotional intelligence, then our kids start to pick that up. And of course, the third modeling is how we treat other people. And this one is more obvious, you know, how we treat our, if you have a partner, how you treat your partner or co-parent, how you treat your own parents, how you treat your friends, how you treat people on the street, how you treat people when they're driving, how you treat people when they're checking you out at the grocery store, all the different ways that we interact with other people, our kids are watching, really, really watching. And even when they're not around, the residue of our interactions with other people, our kids pick that up and they feel it and they know. So all the time when we're interacting with other people, we are modeling for our kids. How respectful are you with other people, you know? And are you doing it because you actually care about the other person and your impact on them, like I said before? Or are you doing it just out of a habit? Because if you say please and thank you out of a habit, for example, using please and thank you as the example, if you say please and thank you out of a habit, it's not really a very deep thing, you know? It means that it's, you're not paying attention to the other person. It means you're not paying attention to yourself. How is it that you can interact with people and deepen your own practice of respect? And when you start to do that, when you start to really pay a conscious attention to it, to how you interact with other people. And of course, I'm telling myself this too, because I as soon as I have a bad day or even a bad moment, I'm much more disrespectful than when I'm conscious, you know? And so I think this is really, really important. So it's important to recognize the three areas that we're modeling to kids all the time: how we interact with them and what that tells them about human relationships, how we interact with ourselves so that they learn about how to, you know, the relationship they can have with themselves, and how we interact with other people.
Yes, absolutely. Those are the three very important areas of modeling. I love it when you break down the topics like that for everybody too. I find it incredibly helpful.
Thank you.
I think this has been an incredibly helpful podcast.
Yeah, I agree.
Was there much more you wanted to add to the topic today?
Yeah, well, I do want to say one more thing about, teaching respect and manners. And, mm-hmm. And that is that it's not wrong for us to want to talk to our kids about having respect and about manners, what manners are. There's actually a story I wanted to tell about that. It's not wrong for us to do that. The key is to do it in a way that doesn't make them feel like they're doing something wrong and we have to fix them. That's the thing, you know? Another thing that's important to keep away from is the feeling of wrongness. And I talk about this all the time, that when we bring wrongness into it, then we are no longer actually teaching what we think we're teaching. We're just teaching them to avoid wrongness. and so I don't know if I told this story on a podcast before, but I wrote an article about it. I probably did talk about it on the podcast, but it relates to this experience. And it's all about the relationship and the feeling that leads to respect. So a number of years ago, I was at a dance event. I'm a dancer. And I do a dance called Contact Improv. And a number of years ago, I was at a dance event, and one of the people there had brought their two-year-old. And I had this little pink tennis ball I was using to kind of massage my leg muscles, and so I was rolling the tennis ball on my legs. and is very bright and very pink. So this cute little 2-year-old ran over to me and was like eyeing this tennis ball. And I said, do you want to play catch? And she got so excited. She came over to me and I threw it to her and she caught it and she threw it back to me and I caught it. And we were laughing and giggling around about it. And we were bouncing it and rolling it back and forth and just having a fun time with this tennis ball. And then at one point, she was so in love with it. At one point I said, hey, kiddo, would you like this tennis ball? And she goes, oh, really? I said, yeah, you can have it if you want it. She goes, no, she didn't say thank you. She said, oh yeah. She specifically didn't say thank you. She said, oh yeah, wow. And I gave it to her and she held that tennis ball like it was gold. She was so happy. And the reason I mentioned that she didn't say thank you is because her gratitude was oozing out of her, oozing. And it was filling me with so much joy to see her joy, because her joy was the gratitude, right? And we were so connected in that moment, and her joy brought me so much joy that it like lifted me, you know, and my eyes widened. I sat up straight and I looked back at her and she felt my receiving of her joy. And that brought her extra joy because I received the joy with so much joy. And all of a sudden we were caught in this joy loop, this gratitude loop. She was gratitude for me. I was gratitude for her gratitude. And she was gratitude for my gratitude for her gratitude. And it was this amazing experience. And I guess I was about 45 at the time. It was a few years ago. I wasn't a 45-year-old and a 2-year-old. It was just two human beings having this incredibly connected experience of gratitude and sharing and love, really, is what it was. And we were just in this incredibly beautiful state. And now kids don't have, it's not that far a journey for them to get into that state. We can get there with them. I do it with kids all the time because they're very close to natural gratitude once we create the space for them to be so. And then as we were right in the middle of this, her dad came over and he was like, okay, honey, it's time to go give Vivek back his ball. And we both had like the spell kind of broke a little bit and it dropped. And I was like, no, I gave it to her. I gave it to her. It's fine. It's hers now. And then she brightened up again and she smiled. And he said, this is the kicker, right? Then he said, okay, say thank you now. And both of our faces fell at that moment because both of us knew that we had just been experiencing true gratitude in the giving and receiving of this experience. And it was so beautiful. And then dad is teaching her so much from the outside in. I'm sure he's thinking he's doing a good thing. Sure, I know that. I don't want to complain about the fellow. But I want to point out what's happening that we often miss, that he thought he was teaching her manners. He thought he was teaching her to be grateful. And she herself was a master of gratitude that could definitely teach him about gratitude. And what really he needs to do is he needs to tune into his kid's natural expression of this kind of joy and gratitude and nurture that rather than impose, to nurture it. And I think this is one of the most important parts of manners is nurturing the attitude, nurturing the feeling, nurturing the value of it, rather than trying to impose and think we're actually teaching. And those are very different mindsets. And the other one, the imposing one, it feels more immediate. It feels more present. It feels like we're doing more. But the other one requires more self-control, more self-awareness. It's a longer process. You know, you think of teaching your kids manners over the course of a decade or two. It's very different than if you have to get them to do it in this moment, right? So I really want to encourage people also, when you're teaching your kids things like that, to take into account a longer timeline. Let it build from the inside out. Build a foundation, a deep, deep foundation. My kid, never once, ever did I tell her to say please and thank you. And if anyone else did, I would jump all over them. I never asked her to apologize, never, ever. And she's the most caring, considerate, polite, self-aware person I've met, honestly. And if she forgets to say thank you for something, she'll like message me the next day or 2 days later or even a week later. She's like, oh, dad, I didn't say thank you for doing that. Like, she really cares about saying thank you. Not because it's a habit, but because she knows how it makes people feel. and she knows how it makes her feel, and she wants to make other people feel that way. This is where manners come from. This is where respect comes from. This is what we want to inspire in our kids, that they care about that, so it becomes self-sustaining throughout their lives. And once we can really hit that on the nose, once we really get our minds wrapped around that idea, we're giving them something that's going to last for their whole lives and is going to be really powerful for them as they move forward and learn to navigate the world. And so I really want to, I really want to encourage that for parents. And then think about that story of the kid and their natural gratitude. And then the father coming over saying, did you say thank you to Vivek? Think about that and think about how you might be doing that to your kids. And instead, shift your lens and look for where their natural gratitude is. And if you're not seeing it, you know, if you're not, like, because a lot of the time we don't see it, then it means you have to look at why they may be afraid to be showing that. Because the kids have this natural gratitude. They have this sense of joy and connection. And we, from a very early age, we have a tendency to move them away from that. But we can bring it back to them. I'll just tell another story quickly. Another story is, because I always have stories with kids, right? Every time I interact with the kids, something happens. And this just happened last week. Where I was on a Zoom call with a friend, and there was a kid that was visiting in the household. It wasn't their kid. And this young one, I had heard that they, one of their things is they ask for things a lot and they demand it. They're always demanding people give them stuff. And it was very much that was the feeling around this kid. And I know that when a kid has a reputation like that, that they're trying to meet a need, that they're trying to get seen, that they're trying to get some kind of relational need met. You know, they're not really greedy. They're not really always trying to get stuff. There's always something underlying it. So this kid happened to come in and be part of the Zoom call and just was just interacting. And I was being my usual friendly, encouraging self. And so the kid just like showed me all their artwork and was really excited about it. And then they saw something in my friend's room that they really wanted. And they said, I want you to give that to me. And they were like, no, this is mine. And so the kid said, okay, well, you can buy me one. And they said, well, maybe I can get it for you. Maybe I'll try. And said, no, you go to the dollar store and you get it for me. And then you'll bring it to my house. And she's really demanding. And my friend was, because they were interacting on the surface level of just the content and the words, they were missing this whole thing that was happening underneath, right? So they were saying, no, I might not be able to do it. And I don't know. And they were talking like that. And the kid just kept pushing and pushing. Well, what are you doing? Why can't you do it? And my friend would say, well, I got to water my plants. She was just trying to find some reason that she wouldn't have to go and do this thing. And he said, well, which plants and where are they? And how long will it take you to water them? On and on and on, right? Really, really pushy, really demanding. This is something that a lot of kids do. And so I jumped in at some point and from Zoom, right? And we had a little bit of interaction, me and this little one. And so I said, hey, kiddo, you know what? I'll betcha when my friend goes to the dollar store and they go near the sketchbooks that they're going to have so much fun looking at all the sketchbooks and thinking, which one would she like? Which one would she like? And then they might look at them and then they find the right one. They might even buy it for you. And they'll be like, I got this for my friend and I'm so happy they have got it. And I'm just excited to give it to them. And then when the two of you meet, she also wanted her to deliver it tomorrow, right? And so I said, and then, you know, when she has some time and the two of you meet next time, she'll be so happy to give it to you and she'll give it to you. And then the two of you can draw together and can be so wonderful. You're such a wonderful kid. And I'm just so excited that you asked for this because it could be something really fun. And she just stopped for a second looking at the screen. She goes, okay. And she just left the room. She was fine. her emotional relational needs were so met. She was seen. Her desire was validated. And there was not a single promise or guarantee in anything that I said, you know? And actually it was, in a way, it was saying maybe. It was a very big maybe, but it was such a connected maybe that she was fine. And then my Zoom meeting ended and my friend went and played with this kid for a while and connected. And they had a nice afternoon together. And then this kid, from just these few interactions, and I mean, at most, it was a half hour that we interacted, at most, said, could you send Vivek a message? And asked her to type it into her phone. And the message said, Vivek, I hope that we can get together and play one day. I really like you. Hopefully you can come over and play with me. And when you do, I want to get you a present, and I'm going to get you something, and I don't know what I'm going to get you. I'm not sure if I can, but I'm really going to try. And then when you come over and we meet, then I want to give it to you. I'm really excited to give it to you, something like that. And I was marveling at this. I was close to tears when I received this message, because she went from being the kid who's always demanding to wanting to give, just to give. She didn't ask me for a thing. Her whole mindset, her whole perspective changed to wanting to give. And it didn't take long for her to have a completely different outlook on the giving and receiving thing, because I met her where she was, you know? And then this is now we talk about teaching kids manners. That was me teaching her manners, you know? In a way, I didn't tell her what to say. I didn't tell her, you know, you could think about giving things to people once in a while. That would do you good. I didn't say anything like that. I just went with her direction. I gave her the validation, and her whole mindset shifted around it. Her feeling around the giving and receiving experience changed. And if she received that kind of response on a regular basis about things, it would completely transform her relationship to giving and receiving, you know? And so this is a way of working with kids that's non-coercive, non-violent, and profoundly effective. And so I really wanted to share that story because it had such a profound effect on me watching this response and this reaction with this young person, and same with the 2-year-old and their gratitude. You know, it's things like that that just they just inspire me so much to want to just change the way we interact with kids in every circumstance.
Mm-hmm. I could not agree more.
Yeah,
changing the way that we interact with children. And the way that we view children has really the power to bring about a lot of powerful change in the world.
Yeah. Thank you, Sujai. This has been a wonderful podcast. I really enjoy talking to you about manners. I think it's a great thing, and hopefully parents will get a lot out of this. And if any of you want to work with the two of us in our membership space, because we hold a membership space where we do a lot of live events every week, we do coaching calls, group meditations, and live classes, as well as we have a private Facebook group where we do a lot of, our community interacts and supports each other quite beautifully. It's a beautiful community of people working really hard on their gentle parenting path. You can find us at www.gentleparentsunite.com/membership and sign up. We have very reasonable rates. Monthly, you pay a monthly fee and you can work with our community. It's really wonderful. And you can also find my articles and videos, because I write a lot and I have a lot of videos. My videos on YouTube are at Meaningful Ideas, and on Facebook and Instagram you can also find me at Meaningful Ideas, and I have hundreds and hundreds of articles and probably close to 150 videos now between Instagram, between Facebook and YouTube. And there's a lot of really powerful resources there for you as well. And that's it, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Please share this podcast around. Give us a good rating, and we love you. We will see you next week.